Good evening, everyone. Wow, that's really loud. Okay. Nice to see all of you here. My name is Scott Terrell. I'm one of the, if you're a Star Trek fan, I'm two of nine, as they say. excuse me. It's been a great week to be here with the Rockford Symphony, and appreciate all of you coming out for our program, The Great Gatsby. I'll talk a little bit about that in more detail. A little bit of background information, if I'm not sure what you've been presented with about me, a little bit about me. I am currently the Director of Orchestral Studies at Louisiana State University in Baton Rouge. But I'm a native Midwesterner. I grew up in Michigan and went to school at Western Michigan University and then graduate school at the University of Minnesota because I needed to go somewhere colder than Kalamazoo. So I spent 10 years there, both in graduate school and then ultimately became the assistant conductor of the Minnesota Orchestra, and then on from there to Charleston Symphony. And then I was the music director from 2009 through 2019 of the Lexington Philharmonic in Lexington, Kentucky, before venturing out into teaching at LSU. And so in addition to that, I have the pleasure of guest conducting kind of all over the country. And it's been a real pleasure this week to be here in Rockford, to learn a lot about your community, to learn about the people who really make this organization thrive, and most of all, the great musicians that make up this orchestra, and they are terrific. So it's been a pleasure to do all of that. So. A word, I guess, about a word or two about tonight's program, The Great Gatsby. When I was asked to come up with programs for the orchestra here, it's always both fun and a little bit scary to try to come up with an idea that's reflective of what you do as a musician, what you think are interesting programmatic themes that might resonate with audiences. And so I started with actually a singular piece, and that is the second piece on the program tonight, which I've had sort of been listening to on and off for the last several years, and I think speaks to the power of music and certainly a composer who's now getting their due, as I like to say. And it's a composer Florence Price, an American composer, who, for better or for worse, the 1930s and 40s was not a great time to be a woman composer, let alone a black woman composer in America. And so she wrote this piano concerto around, I believe, 1934. And it was, she wrote many symphonies. Symphony number one, I believe, was performed by the Chicago Symphony. Won many competitions. She studied music at the New England Conservatory as one of the few places that accepted black students. And this particular concerto, I think, let me say one thing further. Florence Price's music was performed a little bit in her lifetime, but after she died in the early 50s, it really went away for a very long time, till about 2009. When some manuscripts were discovered, and a lot of her music was brought to the fore. And in recent years, if you're a Grammy follower, the Philadelphia Orchestra has really become a champion of her symphonies. And I believe just recorded a set of two of those symphonies, which was nominated for a Grammy Award. So an extremely talented composer. She was a great pianist, great teacher of composition, and this work, this concerto in one movement, one movement, but really it's three movements without pause. So sort of one sweeping gesture, a typical sort of sonata formed first movement, followed by a slow movement, and then ultimately a finale. But what you'll hear, I think, is, again, the 1930s in America and the sort of general idea that I had when I put this program together was what it must have been like to be a composer at that time. If you think about what was happening, we have concert stage music obviously still going on. Composers like Aaron Copland writing now a lot of his ballet scores. You have jazz that makes its appearance throughout the United States, certainly in certain cities more than others. You have Broadway, and then you have the emergence of film in that era. All of which, of course, music playing a key role. So this piece, to me, is a combination of a couple of things. First off, it's a really well-crafted work. I would say it's more of a standard opening movement. You know, the orchestra introduces the tune. It starts with a piano cadenza and then sort of a back and forth dialogue in what we would consider just a pretty standard concerto form. Then we break away into, it makes this very subtle and glorious transition with the strings into what is, I think, one of the most beautiful slow movements I've ever heard, which is a duet between the oboe, more or less, the oboe soloist and the pianist. And in this moment, you start hearing the harmonies that I think are very much a part of the jazz idiom, the spiritual idiom, and the sort of the colors of those chords, the extended chords with the ninths. And it's really beautifully scored. And I know for a fact I was able to perform the piece in the fall in Louisiana, and to a person, everyone's like, oh my gosh, the second movement of the Price Piano Concerto is just really stunning. And it is. She then seamlessly leads us to, after the end of that slow movement, into really a, you know, I guess I can only think of it as, you know, very much a jazz piano with sort of the stretto left hand going back and forth, and a very joyous conclusion. You will likely be humming that tune out the door when you leave tonight, I can assure you of that. But it's very compact, about 18 minutes for all of this. Really well constructed. And I was talking to Irfan, our pianist, and he's like, it really is, it's so pianistic in the way she wrote the piece. She was such a great pianist that everything just naturally goes where it needs to go. And so, well, he also makes it look incredibly easy, and I can assure you it's not that easy. But it's a terrific piece. So, but in that one piece, there were so many styles that she achieved in such a short, compact amount of time, and so many influences that were a part of it, that became sort of the genesis of my idea of the bigger program. And that is, what sorts of things were happening in America, and what styles were happening, or what was about to happen, or all of that. So that's the second piece on the program. The first piece on the program was not written by a composer of that era, but rather written by a living composer today, John Harbison. It's called Remembering Gatsby, Foxtrot for Orchestra. And I won't be upset if any of you need to get up in the balcony and actually foxtrot. I won't personally take offense to it. But what it is it is about a 7 or 8 minute sort of concert opener. Harbison's idea was to create the idea of Gatsby, the very conflicted character. And, you know, in this way, basically the character has two sides. You hear a very loud, brash, majestic opening from the orchestra, sort of clashing dissonance, and then it begins to simmer down until ultimately it's to the second section, which is really the juicy part of the piece, which is, it is a jazz quartet within the orchestra proper, and we have a true foxtrot jazz sound coming from the stage. So it's soprano saxophone, sort of in the middle of the orchestra, solo bass, piano, and drum set. What you'd find in a jazz club. And they make up the corpus, and occasionally the orchestra comes in and out to help the jazz group, or at times to interrupt the jazz group. Harbison's intention of the piece was to capture what it must have been like in the era of Gatsby. So what I always kind of equate it to, at least in my mind, when I listen to the piece or when I conduct the piece, I very much visually see myself walking into a club, smoky club, and I sort of hear the jazz group in the corner, and sometimes I hear them a little louder when I'm a little closer, and sometimes they're a little further away when I'm in other parts of the club. And then there are times you hear conversations that interrupt these things, and that was his intention. His father, Harbison's father, I think, was a pianist and lover of jazz, and it was a little bit of an homage to him that it gave his father a reason to dress up, I guess. At least that's what John said. This became part of the opera late at a later time, The Great Gatsby, that he wrote for the Metropolitan Opera in the late 90s. This piece, however, was written for the Atlanta Symphony in the mid-80s and has remained a rather odd sort of concert opener, but for this program, I think sets the tone perfectly for where we're headed, which is sort of the roaring 1920s, that era of wonderful, colorful jazz music, and just a wonderful way to sort of open the concert. It also ends not loud and brash, but rather with a smile and a toss of a hat, as it were. I think of it as anyway. It's a really wonderful and clever opening to the program. And then we move into the price, and then after that, we go to at the second part of the program. We start with this guy named Aaron Copland, and you know, Copland is a very interesting figure in American music, and we often forget that we know his big ballet scores, you know, Billy the Kid, Rodeo, Appalachian Spring, the big ballet scores. You know, but we also have to remember that Copland was, as a composer of the time, traversed many things: concert stage, he wrote opera, but he also wrote film music, and film and stage music. Let me be a little bit more clear about that. His film music, Our Town, maybe some of you know. He wrote a film score for Of Mice and Men, which was nominated for an Academy Award and did not win. Sorry, Aaron, not that year. But this piece, Quiet City, holds a very unique place in his output of pieces. He wants to create the sort of the soundscape of a major metropolitan city at night when things are very quiet and occasionally thoughts pop into the mind of people, or a stillness, or a loneliness, are all sort of images that he was sort of after. It was written for a stage work, which didn't do very well and fell apart, and he extracted it out for this piece. What makes it unique is the orchestration. It calls for two solo instruments, trumpet and English horn, and accompanied by the full string section. And so you'll see on stage tonight, Mark and Kathy, who trumpet here and English horn here, are separated on the stage. And they form a wonderful dialogue. The trumpet, both bright at times, somber. The English horn is a really dark and wonderful woodwind color that is a unique sound in the orchestra realm. So they have this wonderful dialogue, and the strings serve both to set the atmosphere, to, I think, comment on the dialogue, but ultimately create the sort of ethereal landscape of the piece. It's a very quiet work. It gets loud, kind of crescendos a few times and opens up the sound, but for the most part, it really is a tone poem of sorts, and it's a beautiful, dark, and very unique work in the Copland output. But we hear some of those colors and flavors of those of the 1930s and 40s in this piece. Then we move to Eric Korngold, who I'll quietly admit is one of my favorite composers. He is emigrated from Europe before the Second World War, escaped Europe before the Second World War out of fear, and settled in a place called Hollywood. And so if you're a real aficionado of the 40s film scores, Korngold wrote things like Robin Hood, Captain Blood, these big sweeping swashbuckling movies that we know from the 40s. He and a guy named Bernard Herrmann, or Harold Arlen was another, Max Steiner was another. It's just a wonderful collection of those, the what I call the MGM orchestra group, that wrote these sweeping cinematic scores. And why I chose this piece, while it is not of that era, he wrote this around, I believe, 1920, before he came to the US. It's a piece called Much Ado About Nothing, based on the Shakespeare play of the same name. And so he wrote a large piece, many, many movements, but later extracted it down to this five-movement suite that you'll hear tonight. And in the suite, I think what is fascinating is tonight, it's some, forgive my conductor nerdiness a little bit, the score actually calls for only one string player on a part. However, I've opted for more than that. But we don't use the full string section, because if we used that many strings, it might actually be a little too heavy. So I've found sort of middle grounds. But so you'll see the string section is slightly reduced. There are no basses in the piece, no basses. But there are some other instruments that are rather unique. He uses a large battery of percussion and keyboard. And piano is one, harp's another. And then the third instrument, which you can't really find these days, is an instrument called the harmonium. So unfortunately, we have to manufacture that electronically. But there's a color that harmonium's somewhere between like a reed organ and something you'd find in your living room back around that time. It makes a very unique color. So we have that, we have a sort of smaller wind section, and then the strings are reduced. But you wouldn't believe that there's maybe only 30 people on stage by the amount of sound that the score can create. Korngold was a masterful orchestrator, and by that I mean he studied at the, you know, his ear and training came from Mahler and Strauss, you know, if you think about that for just a moment. And he brings that to Hollywood. And John Williams is forever thankful of that, I'm sure. But in the five movements, it is really, you know, sort of a fast and sweeping allegro first movement. We move to a very beautiful solo cello second movement, a third, which is a march movement, very indicative of Mahler. The fourth movement is an intermezzo, which is stunningly beautiful between the keyboard instruments, cello and viola solo. And then ultimately, it closes with a piece called Hornpipe. And it sounds exactly what it is. The horns launch us off into a great and an exciting sort of beginning, and the orchestra joins in. I chose it because in this work, I personally see where Korngold will be going when he heads to Hollywood. The cinematic sound you already hear in the piece, be it the slow movement, which is beautiful. There's this wonderful sweeping string line in the first movement. You can just see the strings love playing this. And there's a reason why. It just has this incredible sweep of gesture. You can't help but get wrapped up in that music. So I felt that Korngold in this piece, while it preceded his days going to Hollywood and joining the film composers, you can hear the film composer already. The sense of drama, the sense of color, the sense of motion. And so that's why this piece made it onto the program. And also, he was such a compelling figure in the 1930s and 40s, musically speaking. And then ultimately, I had to come up with a closer, and I couldn't find anyone else but this guy named Gershwin. Sadly, that's the best I could come up with, this fella. Gershwin, probably more than any composer, you know, again, didn't live a long time, unfortunately for us. You know, he probably would qualify, in my opinion. There are some great melody composers in history, Mozart, Tchaikovsky. In the 20th century, it's Gershwin. He's a great composer of melody. And so of any composer in the group, just sort of look at what he did. Concert stage, you know, his rhapsodies for piano, opera, Broadway, film. I mean, he was so conversant in all of these things, and I don't think there was a better composer for film, really, than Gershwin at the time. So what happened, well, what you have in this is, this is a medley that was put together by the orchestrator Robert Russell Bennett, who orchestrated many things for Gershwin, many things for a lot of composers, actually. Highly skilled orchestrator, and it's a collection of 8 tunes from any number of films, musicals, some you may know, some you may not know, some you probably know but don't know the tune name, but expertly put together, and I thought was a, you know, a nice way to sort of bring this program full circle, as it were. And you know, if you look at the bookend at one end, which is Gatsby and the idea of jazz club, we end in Hollywood and the great composer of tune and jazz and all things wonderful, actually, and that's George Gershwin. So that's how the concept of the program came together. I think the one never knows how it's going to go. You can put something together on paper, as I've done often, and I always am hopeful that it works. I'm fair to say that this one works pretty well. The orchestra, I think, is playing each of them so remarkably well. They require different types of musical disciplines and playing and styles. You know, Gershwin is a very different style than is the work of Aaron Copland today. So I think that's a testament to the quality of the orchestra's ability to traverse these various pieces. But if I do nothing else for you in selecting this program, there better be at least one singular tune you walk out of here singing tonight, or I have failed miserably. I can assure you of that. And on that note, I just want to say I've had a wonderful week here. I've had an opportunity to meet many people in this community. It's very abundantly clear to me the care and certainly the appreciation that this community has for this really great orchestra. And it is a jewel, and I hope you all know that as somebody who goes around the world sometimes conducting many places. It is a great thing. It's a beautiful hall here, and I've had the most wonderful time. So I'm looking forward to bringing this evening to all of you. I hope you enjoy the concert very much, and thank you all for coming. Have a good day.